ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। हरे कृष्ण। सो वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम कैंटो 11 ऑफ श्रीमद् भागवतम चैप्टर 26। चैप्टर इज एंटाइटल्ड द ऐल गीता, टेक्स्ट नंबर 7 and 8। ऐल उवाच, अहो मे मोह विस्तार कामकश्मल चेतसः देव्यागृहीत कंठस्य नायुखंडा इमे स्मृताः। अहो मे मोह विस्तार। फॉर डिसाइपल्स, King Ayla said, "Alas, just see the extent of my delusion. This goddess was embracing me and held my neck in her grip. My heart was so polluted by lust that I had no idea how my life was passing." Text 8. Naham veda vinirmukta suryo va bhyudito muya mushito varsha puganam but That lady cheated me so much that I did not even see the rising or setting of the sun. Alas, for so many years, I passed my days in vain. Purport. Due to attachment to the goddess, King Pururava forgot his devotional service to the Supreme Lord and became more concerned with pleasing this beautiful young lady. Thus he later lamented, having wasted his valuable time. Those who are Krishna conscious utilize every moment in the Lord's loving service. Om Ajnana Timirandasya, the section of Pururava and Urvashi. As we have been seeing last few days, how Pururava is captivated by Urvashi's beauty. And when Urvashi left him, he was devastated. He couldn't handle that pain. And this is the song that he is singing, having gotten several realizations about romantic life and how it can shatter people's hearts. So that's the section we are seeing here. So as we see from these sections, we may think that Pururava is like an ordinary materialistic person who is carried away by these kind of mundane romance. But if we see Pururava's history and qualities, he was the emperor of the world, which is not an ordinary position. Only a highly qualified person can become such a king. And if he is, and Krishna is quoting his story here in the Uddhava Gita, that shows Pururava is not an ordinary materialist. But in order to bring out certain lessons about materialistic life, Krishna and the scriptures use various characters so that we ordinary living entities can learn those valuable lessons. We need not judge the character of Pururava and think that he is like a karmi, totally gone case, without any sense control. It's not like that. Like several times we hear in the Bhagavatam how Indra is committing several mistakes and commits so many offenses against the Supreme Lord, his devotees. But in spite of all these mistakes, Krishna protects Indra because he is a devotee. And we also hear that if we criticize Indra, then we are committing Vaishnava Aparad. So great people may do certain mistakes, commit certain mistakes, but we cannot judge them. They are all acting under certain divine plan. In the third canto also we find Lord Brahma getting attracted to his daughter Vak. And there when Maitreya is describing this episode to Vidura, he hesitates to describe this story. So he says, I have heard this story from someone and I am going to narrate this. So our acharyas explain that Maitreya is not very comfortable describing this episode. How Brahmaji got attracted to his own daughter. So although Brahma didn't indulge in any illicit activity, he just got a thought. But still, that thought was considered illegal in comparison to Brahma's position. But Maitreya goes on to describe the episode and how his sons, headed by Maricha and others, pray for him, correct him, and advise him that for a person in your position, this is not an appropriate action because you will be setting the example for all the generations that are going to come. And in this way, Brahma understands his mistake. He gives up his body and takes on a new body. He's purified. And later we know how he heard the Chatushloki Bhagavatam and he is now a pure devotee. So here also we describe all these episodes to get those lessons, not to judge the character of the Bhagavatam and end up committing offenses. So the dangers of lust, dangers of these anarthas is what is brought out in these sections. I remember when we were in bus party a few years back, I think it was Baddi or Haridwar, one place where we were in a company distributing books. Early morning we saw the headlines about that horrific Nirbhaya story of Delhi. And everything flashed about the whole gruesome murder that happened and how she was exploited, abused, raped. And the whole nation was shaken up. So after that event, Chaitanya Charanpur wrote an article about this whole thing. He called it the Shurpanakha factor. So what is the Shurpanakha factor here? So, like we know how modern youth and everyone are bombarded by all these explicit images and videos through the internet, through Bollywood, through other movies. And the whole atmosphere is saturated by these kind of vibrations. And it is not easy to remain unaffected by these kind of thoughts, these kind of activities. Everyone goes through those stages and everyone is victimized by these kind of bombardments. But no one wants to exactly pinpoint what is the cause. So in the name of liberalization, in the name of freedom of expression, freedom of speech, freedom of all kinds of freedom, it's the age of freedom. And people want to experiment with everything, but they are not eager to accept the consequences. So in the Gita we find Arjun raising this point, what propels one to commit a sinful act? Atha kena prayuktoyam papam charati purushah anichchanna pivarshneya baladivaniyojita. In spite of knowing that this is a sinful act, why am I pushed to commit that act? And Krishna says, kama esha krodha esha rajoguna samudbhava. It is lust alone which later transforms into anger that forces a living entity, conditioned living entity, to commit a sinful act. And later on in the same section, Krishna talks about how this covers the knowledge of the living entity, avratam jnanam etena. Everything, jnana vijnana nashanam. It not only covers the living entity's awareness and knowledge about his identity, it destroys everything, his realizations. And when a person becomes a victim of lust. So, this is what Krishna is exactly pointing out. This is the cause. Uncontrolled senses driven by lust. Prabhupada in the purport talks about how mind, intelligence and senses are the positions of the enemy. Strategically they have held these positions. And the soul is held captive within the confines of this prison. In one Subhashita verse, one author says, Arthaturanam na suhrunna bandhu, Kamaturanam na bhayam na lajja, Vidyaturanam na sukham na nidra, Kshudhaturanam na vapurna teja. So he says, Arthaturanam, one who is obsessed and greedy about wealth, na suhrun na bandhu, he doesn't have friends or relatives. Like we saw in the earlier chapter about Avadhuta, Avanti Brahman. Kamaturanam na bhayam na lajja. One who is afflicted by lust, he has no bhaya or fame or shame or fear. Vidyaturanam, one who is greedy for knowledge. Na sukham na nidra, he has no happiness, no sleep. He sacrifices both. And Shudhaturanam, one who is hungry. He doesn't have a well-structured body or a good appearance. So the point here is how lusty people are devoid of fame and shame and fear. They can go to any extent. So in these cases, we find, so whenever such events happen, such horrific incidents happen, the government is protesting, public is protesting, and they want immediate action taken against the criminals, punishment, death sentence, and all kinds of legal laws that can prevent such crime. So we find the Shurpanaka factor here. So in the Ramayana we find how Ravan was similarly addicted to attached to Sita, wanted to enjoy Sita's company. In spite of all advices, Maricha advised him, and his brothers advised him, some of his ministers advised him, Vibhishan advised him. In spite of all such good advice, Ravana couldn't accept. Because he was divine. Initially, actually, he felt when Kardushan and his army were killed, Ravan came to his senses to some extent. But then later, Shurpanaka came and incited him, and Ravan felt, I can handle this, I can handle Ram. So initially Ram's power made him fearful, and he decided not to kidnap Sita. But Shurpanaka incited him, and he dared to kidnap Sita. So what is the Shurpanaka in our life? Shurpanaka is his media. The media is what is, in spite of all the legal punishments in place, legal systems in place, still a conditioned living entity goes ahead, commits that crime, because media is arousing those desires in the living entity's heart. But no one wants to point to the media. Who will catch hold of the media? Everything we want in place, punishments, death sentence, cure, reactive steps we take, but preventive steps we don't want to take. So when that is pointed out, people feel, oh, this is entertainment, is everyone's right. Bollywood cannot accept that blame. Hollywood cannot accept media, free news items, internet. That is not to be blamed. These are all, we can use it nicely. People should be trained how to use them nicely. But people are not trained. That is the problem. So in this way, in spite of Ravan knowing all the entire strength of Ram, he couldn't control. Similarly, no amount of legal systems in place will actually prevent such crimes unless people are trained otherwise. So this attitude of being politically correct is what is actually causing the problem. So even in Ravan's assembly, no one wanted to point the blame on Ravan. Only Vibhishan had the courage to exactly point out, these people around you, your son Indrajit and all these ministers, are fooling you. They are not saying the truth. They are simply bootlicking. But Vibhishan spoke directly, you have to give back Sita. Because Ram is all powerful. And if you don't give her back, then the whole Lanka army, Lanka kingdom will be destroyed. But Ravan chose to listen to his ministers. And then we know how what happened later. So in this way, if you want real real liberation, real free society, then this is where we have to take action. And a re-spiritualization of the entire culture and training from childhood, training both boys and girls from childhood, that's what can actually create a cultural, a society where people are trained to control their senses and at the right time indulge in sense gratification according to dharma, according to shastra, and at the right age give up, take to vanaprastha and other four orders. So if we have a proper varnashram society with proper training right from childhood, then we can eliminate all these crimes created by lust, anger and greed. So in this way we see how Pururava is talking about his experiences and realization, which we will see in the coming verses. Today is also an important tithi. Several important events have happened on this day. Vasant Panchami is the day when the fifth day of the waxing moon in the month of Magh. And this marks the beginning of the spring season in India. So after extreme winter, then the spring begins today. Spring is the best, said to be the best climate, best season through in the whole year. In Vrindavan, this is the beginning of the Holi festival. Starting today, they celebrate Holi for about 40 days. Everywhere in Barsana and other places, you find people celebrating Holi. People also dress in a colorful festival dress. Yellow is a standard color. Everyone dresses in yellow garments. And the deities are offered various bhoga with kesar and other yellow ingredients. Yellow tinge is seen everywhere. And Krishna and Radharani and all the gopis celebrate by throwing flower petals, colored powders and colored water. In this way this pastime goes on. Vasant Panchami. Today also the appearance day of Raghunath, appearance right? Raghunath Das Goswami. So Raghunath Das Goswami is one of the six main Goswamis follow in the footsteps of Lord Chaitanya, disciples of Lord Chaitanya. He is the Prayojan Acharya, Sambandha Vidaya Prayojan, the main Acharya of Prayojan Marg. And he is known as austerity personified. A list of austerities that he performed is every day chanting 64 rounds. 64 rounds means 100,000 names of Krishna, holy names. Doing manasi seva in a spiritual body. Even in mental, externally he may be appearing to not do anything, but mentally he is absorbed in his eternal service to Radha Krishna. Bathing thrice in Radha Kund. Offering 1,000 obeisances to Vaishnavas every day. Sorry, 1,000 obeisances to Krishna every day. Offering 2,000 obeisances to Vaishnavas every day. And embracing them. Sleeping only for 90 minutes throughout the day. Some days he wouldn't sleep at all. And whenever he took rest, internally his service continued in the mind. He would eat only one leaf cup, about 100 grams of buttermilk every day. And on the day of disappearance of Lord Chaitanya, Raghunath Das Goswami ate only fruit and milk. After Sanatan Goswami left this world, he would drink only one cup of buttermilk daily. Out of separation, the pain of separation from Sanatan Goswami. After Rupa Goswami left the world, he gave up all eating and drinking, almost nothing. So that was he was burning in that fire of separation. So the Vrajavasis would see him and they would feel great pain upon seeing the condition of Raghunath Das Goswami. He wrote several books. One set of books was Tavavali, a set of books containing other books like Manashiksha, Vilapa Kusumanjali, and others. Another book he wrote was Mukta Charita and Dana Keli Chintamani. So many of these books are available. Prabhupada disciples and other scholars around the world have translated these books into English. So we can read them. Today is also the appearance day of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Disappearance day of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Chakravarti Thakur was born in the year 1654, Shaka era, in the Nadia district of Bengal, place called Prasiddha Devagram. His family appeared in the Radhiya line of Brahmanas. And he had two brothers, Ramabhadra Chakravarti and Raghunath Chakravarti. He received his initiation from a devotee named Krishna Charan Chakravarti. And he was known as a big, great scholar. Scholar of Sanskrit, scholar of all the Gaudiya Vaishnava scriptures, Srimad Bhagavatam especially. He was considered as an undefeatable scholar who could argue with anyone and defeat them. Especially after the disappearance of the six Goswamis, when North India was under the Mughal rule and many temples were getting destroyed, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur was the main hope for all the Vaishnavas present there. He got everyone together and encouraged them, inspired them. His marriage life, it is said he was totally indifferent to family life. But his parents wanted him to marry and stay in Grihastha Ashram. So they arranged his marriage, but he remained in his married life with his wife for only a short time. Very soon he renounced his home and went to live in Vrindavan. His family members attempted several times to get him back, but he didn't come. And in Vrindavan he would stay at the Bachan Kutir of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami on the bank of Radhakund. And he would daily study the literatures written by the six Goswamis. He had his personal deity of Sri Gokulananda, Radha Gokulananda, which we see in Vrindavan. And he also worshipped the Govardhan Shila that came from Lord Chaitanya. So Lord Chaitanya worshipped the Shila. He handed it over to Raghunath Das Goswami, then to Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami, then Mukunda Das, then another devotee, Krishna Priya Thakurani, and then it came to Chakravarti Thakur. So he had worshipped that deity. The term Chakravarti meant one who maintains a chakra of influence around him. So in this case, our Gaudiya Acharyas explained that he who reveals the jewel of devotion to Vishwanath, the Lord of the universe, and thus expands the circle of bhakti everywhere, that is Chakravarti. And he also wrote many books, more than 40 books in Sanskrit he wrote. And he is known as a Rasika Acharya, giving Rasika commentaries to Srimad Bhagavatam shlokas. He also compiled, studied the books of Rupa Goswami, Kavi Karunapur, Narottam Das Thakur. His commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam is famous, Sarartha Darshini, Sarartha Varshini on Bhagavad Gita, Kaustubha Ujjwala Neelamani, Anand Vrindavan Champu, commentary on Chaitanya Charitamrita, all these books, Madhurya Kadambini. His parampara, Shiksha Parampara, Diksha Parampara is also mentioned. He took initiation from Radha Raman Chakravarti, Krishna Charan Chakravarti, in that parampara he comes. And in our Shiksha Parampara we see Bhagavad Gita Prabhupada writes how he comes in the line of Narottam Das Thakur, Srinivas Acharya, that parampara. He disappeared on the day of Vasant Panchami today in the month of Magh, and in his constitutional position as an eternal servant of Krishna, he is known as Vinod Manjari. Some people say that he is also an incarnation of Rupa Goswami, because he exactly represented the teachings of Rupa Goswami in his life and writings. One mystic pastimes also happened with him. One day, Lord Krishna appeared in his vision and ordered him to write commentaries on the Goswami books. And so he immediately started writing. But it was a monsoon season and the rains were pouring down. But somehow there was a shield of clouds above where he was writing, the place he was writing. And there's not a single drop of water fell on his manuscripts. While reading Chaitanya Charitamrita, he read how Kaviraj Goswami is talking about the Kama Gayatri Mantra. And there he says, this mantra contains 24 and a half syllables. And each of these syllables represent one moon on Krishna's body. So Krishna's body has 24 and a half moons. And this mantra, the syllables of the mantra represent these moons. So he counted the mantra syllables and found that it was not 24 and a half. It was 25 syllables. Which is this half syllable? He couldn't figure out. And he was depressed, not able to understand which is this half. So Rashimati Radharani comes in his dream and explains, this is how it is. This particular syllable in the mantra is that half syllable, which represents the half moon on Krishna's body. So as soon as Radharani gave this vision, he went into ecstasy and fainted. Saraswati Thakur talks about Chakravarti Thakur. He says, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur was the protector, guardian and acharya during that middle period, 1600 to 1700, of the historical development of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. So we see how these acharyas were living under extreme harsh conditions. Foreign invaders were coming, destroying temples, killing, persecuting Vaishnavas. In this period, they maintained, translated books, preserved the knowledge, and spread the message in spite of such harsh, severe conditions. So we may not see them traveling all over the world and preaching, but during that critical time, they protected the knowledge, preserved it, because of which we are now able to get access to these literatures. That is about Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. We also have the appearance day of Pundarik Vidyanidhi. Pundarik Vidyanidhi is said to be in the eternal pastimes, he is said to be the father of Srimati Radharani, King Vrishabhanu. So in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, he was a disciple of Madhavendra Puri and he was the spiritual master of Gadadhar Pandit, one of the members of the Panchatattva. And he was a close friend of Swarup Damodar Goswami. So it is said that one day they were having a fight, a friendly fight between Pundarik Vidyanidhi and Swarup Damodar Goswami, each trying to get the dust off the other person's lotus feet. So they fought, had a wrestling match, but no one was able to get the dust. But Lord Chaitanya, seeing this, was extremely happy and he just laughed. Pundarik Vidyanidhi had several names. Sri Vidyanidhi, Acharya Nidhi, Bhaktyanidhi, Premnidhi. Premnidhi name was given by Lord Chaitanya himself. Simply by hearing his name, Lord Chaitanya said, the whole world becomes purified. That is Pundarik Vidyanidhi. Then Raghunandan Thakur. Raghunandan Thakur, we know this famous pastime of how he, the deity personally accepted that laddu that he offered. As a child, his father had ordered him to offer this laddu. But he didn't know that this has to be offered and Krishna accepts it with his glance. So he started crying and seeing his crying, the deity personally accepted, knelt down and accepted that laddu. So that is Raghunandan Thakur, son of Mukunda Das. Mukunda Das were three brothers. Mukunda Das, Sri Madhava Das and Narahari Sarkar were three brothers who lived in Sri Khanda. And Mukunda Das's son was Raghunandan. So Mukunda Das was a doctor, Vaidya, in the court of the Muslim king. But in spite of serving under the Muslim king, he always remained absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. So Raghunandan was born in the year of 1432, Shaka era. And Abhiram Gopal Thakur and Raghunandan Das Thakur were in a good relation. They would dance together continuously in Kirtan. One day it is said, Raghunandan, while dancing, Raghunandan Thakur's Nupur, the ankle bracelet, opened up and fell into a pond. Since that day, the pond is known as Nupur Kund. And the devotees there, local devotees in that parampara, they have preserved that Nupur in that local temple there. Raghunandan Thakur is said to be Kandarpa Manjari in his spiritual world. Some people say that he is also one of the sons of Krishna in Dwarka. This is what Kavi Karunapur says in his book, Gaur Ganodesha Deepika. And he has his descendants still living. His son was Kanai Thakur. And they still, those descendant members still live in Srikhanda. One of the famous member of that family is Panchanan Kaviraj, a great scholar in that line. And today is also the appearance day of Vishnupriya Devi, the second wife of Lord Chaitanya. So Lord Chaitanya earlier first married Lakshmi Priya, when Lord Chaitanya was away from her, Lakshmi Priya, in the pain of separation, left her body. So then his mother wanted him to marry again. Sachi Mata wanted him to marry again. So there was a Brahmana named Sanatan Mishra in Navadvip. And very great devotee of Lord Vishnu, a very pious Brahmana. He used to feed several poor people in that town, in that village. And because of his good qualities, he had a daughter named Vishnupriya. Vishnupriya also happened to be a great devotee, always worshipping Tulsi, bathing in Ganga, worshipping Lord Vishnu, devoted to her parents, devoted to Brahmanas, devoted to following Vaishnava principles, performing puja, archana, worshipping Tulsi. In this way she developed all the devotional good qualities, and she also practiced extreme austerity and piety. So every day she would visit Ganga for bathing, and there she would worship Ganga Devi. So Sachi Mata, when she observed Vishnupriya, she blessed her, saying, "May you find a good husband." And Vishnupriya would come to Sachi Devi and take her blessings, touch her feet. And she came to know that her name is Vishnupriya, daughter of Sanatan Mishra. So Lakshmi Priya had passed away, and Sachi Mata is wondering who can be a second good wife. So Sachi Mata tells Nimai that about this girl, "Are you okay? Do you accept this proposal?" So Mahaprabhu, Nimai says, "Okay, I don't mind." So then Sachi Mata decides to go ahead with this proposal. And then she called the matchmaker, Kashinath Pandit, and told him to go and fix an appointment with Sanatan Mishra. So Kashinath Pandit was very happy. He wanted to see both of them married. So he was overjoyed and immediately set out to the house of Sanatan Mishra. He chanted holy names of Hari and approached in great happiness to Sanatan Mishra's house. So it is said that Sanatan Mishra actually belonged to a higher caste. Higher, even among the Brahmanas, there were several divisions of caste. So he belonged to a higher caste than the caste of Sachi Mata and Nimai. Therefore, Sachi Mata was not sure whether Sanatan Mishra would accept this proposal. So when Kashinath Pandit submitted this proposal, Sanatan Mishra was actually very happy, because he and his wife were actually praying that Vishnupriya married Nimai. So they also wanted this marriage to happen. So as soon as this proposal came, He said, he cried out in happiness. And he said, yes, we are ready. So in this way, he showered blessings and gifts upon Kashinath Mishra also. Kashinath Mishra arrived at Sachi Devi's house and informed his, gave the news, and Sachi Mata was also very happy. And they immediately started making arrangements. So when they heard this news, soon the news spread all over Navadvip town. And everyone was happy to hear about this arrangement. So one person, his name was Buddhimanta Khan. Buddhimanta Khan was a very wealthy landowner, a Brahmana landowner. And he said, I will sponsor the entire expenses of the marriage. So the other friends of Nimai and the other townspeople said, no, we also want to contribute. We also want to participate in this celebration. Buddhimanta Khan said, look, we don't want to perform this marriage in your typical austere Brahminical style. You people will spend little amount and do some simple kind of wedding. I want this wedding to be really grand. So you don't worry about contributing. I'll manage the whole thing. So in this way he arranged. So the other people also felt, yeah, it is true. Nimai's marriage with Vishnupriya should be really grand, royal. So they took a back seat and Buddhimanta Khan made all the arrangement. So an auspicious time was selected and the whole Navadvip town arrived for the marriage. Immense canopies were set up, an enclosure was made, a rows of plantain trees, and Nimai and the bride looked very beautiful, dressed in fine garments, wedding ornaments. The two of them appeared like radiant, spotless moon. The temple where the marriage was going to be held was finely decorated. The earth was sprinkled with colored rice powder and paintings of auspicious symbols. Fresh green plantain leaves created a festive atmosphere. The temple was decorated with water pots filled with fresh water, mango leaves, lighted ghee lamps, new rice paddy. So new rice paddy is said to be auspicious. As well as pots filled with yogurt and other auspicious things. So people came not only from the local village, but also from neighboring towns, miles around, to witness this event. Everyone was invited. So noon approached, noon time, musicians began to play various musical instruments, mridanga, sanai, drums, cymbals. In this way, a nice festive atmosphere was created. The professional poets chanted verses of praise, glorifying the couple. Then Lord Vishnu was worshipped, bhoga was offered to the deities, aarti was performed, and the auspicious wedding was performed. All the Vaishnavas chanted the names of Lord Hari. The Brahmanas chanted the Vedic mantras and they blessed the couple. They surrounded him with great enthusiasm and everyone was floating in an ocean of happiness and bliss, just seeing, looking at the couple. So it is said, the amount of garlands and sandalwood paste and betel nuts that were offered as gifts to the guests, it was so much. No one could estimate the amount, the quantity that was distributed there. So it is said, after everyone left, what was left over was enough for 5 additional weddings. That was the amount of gifts they were distributing. Buddhimanta Khan had arranged. Buddhimanta Khan and maybe, I don't know, demigods may have got there. Finally, the Supreme Lord Nimai and Lakshmi, Vishnupriya, exchanged garlands and the crowd let out a tumultuous roar in jubilation. So Vishnupriya first offered the garlands at the lotus feet of the Lord, then surrendered herself, and Lord Gaur Sundar, Nimai, picked up the garlands and placed them around Vishnupriya's neck. At this time, Lakshmi and Narayan, Vishnupriya and Lord Gaur Sundar, began throwing flowers at each other with great delight. And from the above, the demigods invisibly showered flowers upon the couple. In this way, everyone became extremely happy and jubilant. So it is said, whoever hears this pastime, the Falastuti, Kaviraj Goswami gives the Falastuti. Sorry, Vrindavan Das Thakur gives the Falastuti that whoever hears this description of the Lord's wedding with faith and love will soon attain the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu ki. So I'll stop here. If anyone has any comment or thoughts. Grantha Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.